So I will tell you what I did find post-FTX collapse was speaking to a bank that said they had a cease and desist, which is a legal term, from speaking about anything crypto or blockchain related till the following year. And that was an eye-opener for me that we really need education in this space to differentiate the volatility known as cryptocurrencies or the fraud associated with ICOs, which has a negative connotation, to the real benefits of blockchain technology.
Welcome to Boston Blockchain. I'm Kyle Hedman of China Shop Productions, and today's guest is Annalise Osborne, Chief Business Officer at Kadena and author of From Hoodies to Suits. In this episode, Annalise and I discuss the intersection of blockchain technology and traditional finance as she explains the challenges of institutional adoption, the innovative approach of Kadena, and the generational shift as younger generations embrace digital solutions. Make sure you check the show notes if you want to get your hands on a copy of the book. But now let's meet our guest. Annalise, thank you so much for getting here. I know we had a little bit of a mix-up with the calendar invite. I'm so sorry about that, but I'm glad to see you made it here safely. Thank you so much for taking some time.
No problem. I'm super excited to be here, Kyle. Thanks for having me.
This is your first time at Boston Blockchain?
It is my first time. I have been witnessing from afar all these amazing events that Boston Blockchain has had. And so I'm very excited to take part. I am speaking today, and then I am speaking again next Thursday as well.
What's next Thursday?
Next Thursday, we're doing a fireside chat on my book, From Hoodies to Suits, Innovating Digital Assets for Traditional Finance. And we're having a conversation with other blockchains as well on upgrading finance using blockchain.
Is that here in Boston?
Deloitte is sponsoring and Aon are sponsoring, and it's Deloitte's office. And I've been traveling all week, so I was unable to make it before today. So today is fitting in with the average, with the typical schedule.
Well, I'll try to get you out of here before the first event starts then.
No problem.
Because there's been some really great speakers, topics that run the whole gamut of things. If you're interested in any aspect of crypto or blockchain technology, you'll find it here.
I love it. So glad to be here.
So how did you get interested in the technology? Like, how did you first come across it?
So I did traditional finance for a long time, career. And then I had left. I was at Moody's running different teams within structured finance, so really focused on commercial mortgage-backed securities and different commercial real estate. But for me, what was interesting even about CMBS was that it was innovative at the time for financing. It changed the cost, decreased the cost of financing. It decreased the risk on banks' balance sheets. And so I've always been the idea of how do we make finance more efficient has always been with me.
I can see that being something that somebody who is on that side would probably be craving. I've seen how archaic some of the systems are that some of these legacy companies use.
Oh, absolutely. So I had then done a number of different board work opportunities, like people had sourced me out for board positions. And one was a regulatory task force for crypto and blockchain. And it was focused on ICOs. And this is late 2017, early 2018. Initial coin offering.
Okay.
So initial coin offering was big in 17 and 18, but what it was in essence was an IPO, like an initial public offering. So a company with an IPO, they go public when they're an established company. An ICO was the idea of we have an idea and we would like to launch this company and we would like funding today. And so it was innovative in the sense that...
kind of like a way of bypassing venture capitalists and angel investors.
And it allowed the universe of potential investors who missed out on the initial tech boom to partake in the next one.
Okay.
That said, it was ripe with fraud because there were bad actors. But also, I think there were people that meant well in the sense that they thought that they could launch a company, but perhaps they didn't have the experiences. This is kind of the hoodies and the suits. So it was a bunch of hoodies that had done it without experience, and it's hard to actually run a business generate revenue. So I think there are both sides.
That's a great point that you just made about the missing the experience things. That's one of the things that we learned from talking to some of the venture capitalists here at this event is that they don't just give you money. They're giving you a lot of expertise and experience and helping guide you in some of these things that maybe you're lacking experience in.
Absolutely. If you're ever taking money from investors, you're in essence marrying those investors and they will be your partners. And so make sure that when you have a partner that they're bringing a lot to the table as opposed to just money. So you really want to leverage their experience. This is for the founders out there.
Yeah. Yeah. Any other advice you'd have for founders then?
Oh, I have plenty. Plenty. Okay, but let's go. So I, just about my experience then at the time when I understood what blockchain technology was from being on this task force, I did lots of lots of research. And I will say the research was on YouTube. So it was a little different because there wasn't that much out there.
Right.
And so it was real, and it was less focused on finance and it was more just general about what blockchain is, but recognizing what that does for finance because of my financial experience, I assumed other people were already doing it. And then what it turned out is the people that were doing it lacked that expertise as well. They were more entrepreneurs or more tech people. And finance is regulated and structured in certain ways. And I don't think finance is broken. I think it can be more efficient. But there's that whole regulated aspect too. And so I think there were false starts initially because there was a lack of experience creating securities, digital asset securities, which were security tokens back at the time. So I found a partner who had a broker dealer and we launched, he had the company Propeller and we launched digital asset securities with Propeller. We were merging, we looked to merge with a tech company. So it was really a wild ride. So I understand the world of founders and not getting paid and, you know, stretching every penny. And also at the time we had a great idea, but it was difficult to generate revenue for institutional digital assets back in 18 and 19. And we wanted to build out automated servicing was really the goal. So yes. It's really, in essence, anything that's on a spreadsheet can be tokenized, right? Because you can use smart contracts to automate payments, which is a lot of the fixed income world. And even some in the securities world, there's so many benefits that you have from this technology, peer-throughs, trust, access to information, the thought process of private securities decreasing that bid-ask spread because it's deemed that one person knows more than another. And so there's that information gap. And so blockchain can solve a lot of this. And so we launched it. We did create digital asset securities through FINRA, which is a regulator, which we did private placement. So it wasn't, they were exempt from SEC.
Okay.
Because they were smaller. But we did create some amazing things that hadn't been done before. Really just like paying in DAI as a stable coin for one of the loans that we had created. So, which would be harder today because DAI is LG. We're a little further along in regulation. So that's how I got into the space. And so then that didn't fly. As in, it was hard to generate revenue.
We didn't
get our funding. We were doing a very large Series A with really institutional investors mainly and some VCs. And then I went to Arca Labs. Arca Labs had a tokenized treasury fund or created a tokenized treasury fund prior to Franklin Templeton's. And the thought process there was you could have a digital, and it's a security because it's a treasury. But in essence, it's like digital currency to an extent. We can't call it that. Okay. It's a low volatility security because it's, but it's freely, it's transferable for whitelists. But think about instead of sitting on a bunch of cash, you could be sitting on these technically, ideally with the right amount of volume, liquid securities that you could generate income on. So instead of sitting on $100 cash, you could sit on $100 of Arcoin and you generate a 5% return because it's backed by a basket of treasuries. And so collateral and treasury management, lots of ideas of benefits for that. Also, at the same time, working with institutions and companies, small, medium, large, all across the gamut. Institution is a very general phrase about creating securities and finding opportunities for blockchain to make things more efficient. So did some work in commodities as well. And it's just early. So one of the...
right.
You know, you can see all this that can be done. And one of the holdbacks is that all of the structural, which you had mentioned, the technology in place at a lot of these institutions or companies is old school. And you have very old systems that are built on top of. And if you think you'll find that every department has its own tech stack.
Right.
So it's not consistent. But if you're going, you know, now is the time to upgrade and figure out...
Why do you think it's been so hard to do that?
I think it's regulation as well. You have to keep your files. So you always have to know what's happened. So I think building on top of has been easier than wiping out. And also if you're going to totally redo your entire company's, I guess, back office, you know, tech, that's going to take a year and a half and then tech's going to have moved on. Right. And so I feel like it's been easier to kind of piece things together. And I don't think, again, with finance not being broken and it's still churning, I don't think it's been a major focus. So I think now when we have to look 2, 5, 10 years out in the future and the whole changing dynamic of the supply and demand, which will come with the changing generations, I think that's where we see the growth. That's where we see Fidelity was one of the first companies, which is private. Franklin Templeton was another top company, which is public, but really private because it's generally owned by the family, though it is publicly traded. But those are more family office decisions thinking long term, right? It's right. not worried on the quarterly earnings call. And a lot of the public companies and large institutions have quarterly earnings calls that they're judged, you know, the CEO is judged by what the return is that quarter, as opposed to let's invest longer term. That said, look at what JP Morgan has created. And yes. JP Morgan is a behemoth and they have a very large tech fund, but they have also created this amazing back office blockchain that saves them millions and millions of dollars. And they have created such efficiencies in doing that. So I feel like they have been a leader despite talking negatively about cryptocurrencies. They've really been focused on the technology of blockchain. So I do think there's a bunch of other companies that are looking to do that, both either to, you know, you want to look to either save money or to make money.
Yeah, looking at like Onyx in particular and the platform JP Morgan's building out, like that's the first sign that I've seen that there's like real change coming. Like
it is, and that's just the peak.
Yes,
I know, like the tip of the iceberg. I do think also, and that's private. Right? It's a private chain. It's also tied to JP Morgan, so other banks are a little hesitant to support a competitor.
But I think they're starting to see what it can do, though.
Absolutely. I think that's what you need to highlight is that you know, look how much money we saved. They're repricing repo. Repo is, in essence, where you're lending U.S. Treasuries for liquidity reasons to large institutions, and trillions of dollars transact every day in the repo market. But instead of pricing it for 24 hours, you can price it per minute, if you're using technology. It's a very old school system that they're making much more efficient. And I feel like they're the leaders in that space. And others are definitely stepping in as well.
Fidelity, I've been talking to some people who have ties with there and like some of the cool stuff that they're working on behind the scenes. There's going to be some really cool stuff coming out here in the future.
Absolutely. And this is Boston where there's so much money. And so right. I feel like it's old school. Just historically, there's always been money here. And so I feel like this is a great, great organization with the BBA and a great place to actually move this innovation forward. Mm-hmm. So I will tell you what I did find post FTX collapse was speaking to a bank that said they had a cease and desist, which is a legal term, from speaking about anything crypto or blockchain related till the following year. And that was an eye opener for me that we really need education in this space to differentiate right. the volatility known as cryptocurrencies or the fraud associated with ICOs, which has a negative connotation, to the real benefits of blockchain technology.
Right, trying to separate crypto from the yes. tech that drives it.
So I think there's really three holdbacks to institutional adoption. I think the first is education. The mm-hmm. second's regulation. We can't work in the gray. We need to have black and white.
Yep.
And then the last is this interoperability, which is really my thought process, the institution with the chains and then, you know, chains together, we can talk about that too. But so I can make a difference on the first one right
yep.
away.
Yep.
So I,
which I did.
I wrote a book called From Hoodies to Suits, Innovating Digital Assets for Traditional Finance. And the real goal there was that it's an entertaining and educational guide. It is not a textbook, but it was really so people would not say we're not talking about crypto till next year, because it's not crypto. Like this is not FTX was a bad actor situation. And it was also a situation of you had a bunch of hoodies that were running companies that in the suit, there wasn't enough oversight. Right. There wasn't a yes. board of directors. There wasn't like the risk checks that you have in institutions. And so I feel like this is like the book kind of highlights that too, is like, let's learn from what we, you know, the mishaps that we've had in crypto, but really what it is the hoodies and suits working together. And it's also the suits recognizing the amazing benefit that the hoodies have created with this $2.5 trillion industry.
Right.
So,
well, one of the other cool things about this too, because you had to learn yourself, like you had to go out and source all the information. You said you had to look at, watch a load of YouTube videos, right?
When I started, yeah.
One of the hard things about finding education and materials in a space that's new like this is knowing what to trust. So you've already done the work for us.
I will say I love podcasts. So yes. I listen to a lot of podcasts because it's great because it's conversation and it's people, you know, it's people speaking about interesting topics. And I
hopefully
think that's fantastic. So every morning I have my, you know,
what's your favorite?
So I always listen to Markets Daily in the morning to find out what's happened in crypto. Again, I'm more blockchain oriented, mm-hmm. and I'm now chief business officer of Kadena, which is a layer one proof of work blockchain, and we have a liquid token. So I think it's very important to stay on top of the crypto markets for me.
Mm-hmm.
I also listen to, I always follow Markets Daily, Noel Atkinson's Crypto is Macro is something that I read every morning as well. And so that is great because it ties in the current macro world with what's happening in the markets, which is kind of blockchain and crypto. I really like Anthony Pompolino's just because I think it's interesting. And he's also, it's not always crypto oriented. It's kind of different things that make you think. I also listen to Bankless and Galaxy Brains. So
Galaxy, I think I've heard that one too.
Yeah. So it's always interesting, you know, what people are talking about. And
there's so many good podcasts out there too.
Yeah, there are so many. Honestly, that's the tip of the iceberg. I have so many more. It's just, and I have been so lucky with the book of being invited onto podcasts, learning more, like more people. And it just opens my world to podcasts that might not have as, you know, be as large, but are absolutely amazing.
Have you ever considered starting your own? Because I feel like you've got a lot of knowledge that you could probably share.
So when I was at Arca, I did an institutional tokenization podcast called Tokenization Talks. And that was really, there's not that many players in the institutional tokenization space as thought leaders.
Right.
And so that was really focused on you know, building out bonds or tokenizing funds. Look at all the funds that have been tokenized now, and they're all on public chains because that's where the opportunities are. And I do feel a lot of the even private and the banks are looking to outside the US, a lot in Singapore, looking at open permission networks, which are public chains.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like there is kind of a moving from the idea of private, which if you look at, you know, 2017 and R3, which came out, which was a consortium of banks created to figure out how to use blockchain, which was really private at the time. But I feel like the world is moving more public.
Yeah. Is that still out? Can people go back and listen to that?
Oh, Tokenization Talks?
Yeah.
It is. I actually have, I've tied it together on a YouTube channel. They're dated, but they're not that dated because it's Hamilton Lane, what Hamilton Lane's accomplished, what Franklin Templeton has done. So it's really thought leaders in the institutional space that talk about what they created.
You mentioned another project that you have going on. Was that
Kadena?
Kadena? Yeah. Yes. Can you tell me about that?
Absolutely. So I've recently started at Kadena as chief business officer, I said.
Mm-hmm.
I've been there about 4 months. Kadena was mainnet went live 5 years ago. It is a proof of work public chain. It was created by two gentlemen that created JP Morgan's first innovation lab, because JP Morgan has always been in the forefront for blockchain. And they left to create the best of both worlds between Bitcoin and Ethereum.
Oh,
so Bitcoin is proof of work. And so you have the security of the proof of work computation. And then Ethereum is the program, like has a programmability that launched, which is out, which is amazing. And that's really groundbreaking for finance. That the scalability option and then also the low gas cost. And so they created Chainweb, which is actually kind of weaving of different chains all tied together, which helps with the decreased gas costs, but it also allows it to scale infinitely because you continue adding chains and it doesn't.
So when you say like the multi-thread chain, so instead of building on like sequentially, it's actually going out.
You can kind of choose which chain that you build on so you can add more chains.
Okay.
And they interact between each other as well. So they created this for financial settlement, very successful initially when they launched. And then they were super excited about tech and innovation, and they were tech guys doing tech, as opposed to focusing on how do we build what we created, which is more of the business mindset. And, you know, they were looking at creating easier applications for blockchain or things that really the tech guys found interesting. And so bringing me along, and they did work on different, you know, projects along the way that some, you know, worked and some didn't. And the chain, we have Active Deepin, we've got DEXs, we have DEXs, we have exchanges. We're now looking to work in the U.S. more. We were really focused on externally with the concerns of, you know, Will was at the SEC before he was at JP Morgan. And so we're very focused on regulation. And so we were, you know, most of our trading was done outside the United States until there was clear regulation here. But with Bitcoin and, you know, with Bitcoin and the ETFs and what's happening, and we are proof of work.
Felt more comfortable now.
There's a more of a comfort level. And so we are focused absolutely on increasing kind of the liquidity and DeFi aspects of our token. And then we are also focused on adoption on chain, which is really where I've always been focused on, is how do we build? Because I think for institutional adoption, when I left to write the book, I was really thinking, when I go back, how do I want to help?
Right, right.
And so I feel that you can make a big difference on the institutional side or on the tech side.
Mm-hmm.
So first I thought I would do institutions, and then I decided I've already done institutions in my life, and maybe I'm better suited for working at a startup and helping it grow. And so I absolutely love it. I love the people. I love the ideas behind the team, and I'm just, it's like a dream job. So I'm super excited about what we're doing.
How much has your experience on the other side helped you going to the startup tech side?
Oh, 100%. Absolutely, yeah. 100%. I think it's important to recognize the rails, how money moves, how securities are created, how debt is created and structured, and all of the regulation behind it. I ran a broker-dealer at one point, and that regulation is always in the back of my head with every decision that we make. I also think training teams, having run large teams, it's helpful to figure out motivation and structure and goals. I think that's super helpful. And I think, you know, managing a company through growth is also something, you know, we're working on now. I listen to a lot of podcasts on that too, just because what can I learn from what other people have done?
Right? I guess, yes.
And so I really look towards that. I do think this industry is super collaborative. I think we all are in it together, and I feel it's very much that way. It's not like an I win, you lose, that sort of thing. It's more.
So why do you think that is? We've noticed that too.
We need interoperability as well. So Everybody does need to work together. And I almost feel the backbone of crypto was really kind of putting power in the people's hands. If you think about the idea of Bitcoin and taking out the banks or Occupy Wall Street, which is all about the same time. So I really do think we need our collective kind of brain power and working together in partnerships to move this all forward. And so, you know, it's a great group of people. It's not as, I don't find it as cutthroat, you know, as some. I've worked in hedge funds as well. And
even the venture capitalists, I've said this multiple times, but they've been like extremely open and friendly too. Like you'd expect them to be a little bit more like cutthroat and bottom line focused. And it doesn't seem like that at all.
Well, we've got to grow the industry. So I feel like a rising tide lifts all ships. And so the more we can move this along, the stronger we all get. But we're also making a difference. I mean, it's not just about the money.
Yeah.
And so it's like, look what we've created and look what we've done and look how much better the world is for it. So I do think there's altruism in there as well.
Where do you see that going in the next 5 to 10 years?
How institutional adoption works in the world? Well, I have a chapter on this in my book.
I just got my copy today, but I will be reading it on the way home.
So it's on Audible as well, which admittedly, I have listened to it on Audible.
Did you do the read yourself?
No, it's not. My publisher had said I didn't want to do it, but it was after the fact because I did want to do it. And he told me, no, you didn't. And so he's like, I'm sure you didn't want to do it. So he was so thoughtful.
I think you'd have been good at it.
Thank you. They said it's a lot harder than you think.
Yeah, I bet.
But okay, so where the world's going to go? So I kind of look at 10 years out, and we will get to the point where blockchain's not talked about. It's really behind the scenes. I'm a big believer in that. I do think the way things will change. So I wrote the book in 2 months. I knew what I wanted to write. I had it all in my head for 2 months for the first 10 chapters, which I could kind of write out the stories and back it up with stories and facts, and write out the facts, I guess, and then back it up with justification. And then the last chapter is really where the world's going to go. And so that I spent a whole month on, because that's the only one you can really poke holes in. But the whole idea is I want to make sure that I feel comfortable and this is what I see happening. So I do think digital money will be more mainstream. I think it will become mainstream. That having programmable money, there's so many benefits that we can't even see right now, which is why it's helpful to have the consortiums of people and what can be done. But I think that's going to be a game changer. And I think the fact that you have PayPal coming into the space where people that use it don't need to know it's on chain.
Right.
But it's automatic. You don't have to wait I had to wait 5 days to cash a check a few months ago. And you're like, this is ridiculous, right? And then transferring money internationally, like all of the money that these institutions will be able to save on cross-border transactions is huge. That said, a lot of institutions are making money off of cross-border transactions, so they will have to find other ways to do it. But also, if money is transacted and I get it today and I don't have to wait 5 days, I can put it to work today. And if I'm a JP Morgan, that is amazing, right? If I'm an institution, any institution, then that allows me to put capital to work today.
Yes.
So that's beneficial as well. So I think that is a big game changer. I do think there'll be a lot more in the securities that are tokenized that we don't necessarily need to know they're tokenized. I think the stock market's very efficient, but I think there's a huge world of private investments and private assets out there, and that continues to grow. There are fewer public companies than there used to be. I think there's half as many from 1996 to 2020, half as many public companies.
Wow, really?
And so—
Is that because of mergers or because of failures?
It is all including the benefit. There's a lot of, going public it's a huge lift. It's expensive. Right. And I think there's a lot of private companies, companies that want to stay private. And so they're having opportunities to invest in those private companies is something tokenization can help with.
Oh.
I think tokenization can also help as people that invest in a project that's 10 years that they can trade out, gives them optionality, right? What stocks I can buy today and I can trade tomorrow if I want to, but if I want to invest in a private investment, usually you have to hold it for an extended period of time unless it is tokenized and it allows me to find a marketplace to trade out because my life changes and my kids go to college or I want to buy a house or whatever that reason is. So I do think there'll be bigger tokenization world. I think the world of DeFi, decentralized finance, will merge with the world of traditional finance. I think in the private credit markets, there's a big, like right there, which is lending money. If I hold money in my crypto wallet, I can lend it out again, so I can be the bank.
Right.
And so I do think that there will be find ways that traditional finance, past the KYC AML, which right now is, that's something to kind of defining that, because we always have to worry about anti-money laundering, make sure you know your customer and that the money is clean. So I think that will be solved, which goes to digital identity. So I think there's different ways. We're working with zero knowledge proofs on our blockchain and Kadena. And we're looking into the future and how will we be able to, there's so much data with blockchains. How will we be able to use the zero knowledge proofs to protect certain privacy aspects. But digital identity, there's so many people that don't have identities in the world, but also really from financially, it's KYC AML to be able to have a check like TSA pre-check, right?
Yes,
or clear.
Yes, yes,
versus there. Like if I'm a broker dealer, I go to jail if it's wrong.
Right.
So it's hard for me to say, I'll hire this other company to do it because I still go to jail. The other company doesn't go to jail. The liability's on me. So how do we make that to make sure it's still KYC to AML, but take away that the orange jumpsuits?
We need something to take the scariness away for the institutional money, right? Because they're going to be extremely risk averse, especially something that's just not really too well defined yet. So as we continue building that out, they should start to feel more comfortable investing and adopting.
And as the world gets so much more digital, do you want your address to be out there everywhere? I have to show my ID to show my that I'm 21. That was a long time ago for me
too.
But we won't say that. But all of my information doesn't need to be there. So I think there's different ways in privacy we can come up with digital identity that's more beneficial.
Oh, that's interesting. I didn't thought of that aspect of it.
Yeah, there's I think data is good. There's so many great things, and I do think there'll be kind of shifts as well. One thing we haven't talked about as much is the changing generation. So if you look at millennial and Gen Z, it's just very different, right? They were born with a supercomputer in their hand and everything is digital. And it's also all social media. So it's this combination of kind of almost, I think, utility benefits will come into and getting to having the opportunity to know your super customers for companies or your best fans because you have this technology brings you closer together. Or your, Ticketmaster, I think that's another, like a whole monopoly that you have, or, Live Nation, that if I am a performing artist, I can talk directly to my fans. And I think social media does that, but I think that blockchain will help with that as well.
Or imagine a world with you can institute royalties on those ticket sales.
Absolutely. Yes. Rihanna did a tokenization of one of her songs.
Oh, yeah.
It wasn't actually Rihanna, but somebody that owned a share of her songs, and that sold out in seconds. And so then anyone that listens to that one Rihanna song gets royalties. So I feel like there's so many benefits in that. Wouldn't you want to buy your favorite song or favorite catalog of your favorite performer? And so I think there's a lot of benefits. One thing I talk about in the book is that the Kentucky Derby winner was not tokenized. It wasn't blockchain, but he was fractionalized. And so, this horse is now a security investment.
Right?
Because a lot of people... That's an interesting, it's a private investment and people wanted to partake in it. And so I feel like tokenization would allow more people to trade in and out of that. But it's just a step to look at the world slightly in a different way. And there was a study in the UK that 85% of Gen Z get their financial information from Finfluencers, which is, you know, it's a different
kind of double-edged sword. But
so absolutely, there's no, you know, checks and balances for Finfluencers either. But it also makes you think about these, and the money is all going to millennial and Gen Z. So right now it's with the baby boomers and it's all transferring. It's called, there's something called the Great Wealth Transfer, they've termed it, so you can look into that. But the money is going into the hands of millennial and Gen Z who think differently, mm-hmm. who go to Finfluencers online, who are used to being digital in nature and want to look at Robinhood, right? They want to be able to use their phone and their apps to transact and invest. So both from payments and from investment. So I do think that there's going to be kind of a mental shift that will come out to be a financial shift. And these people will be not only investing their own money, but they'll also be running the companies. So I feel like they'll be a little more open to change.
I love that. I think we're starting to see that shift now. The book, From Hoodies to Suits, where can people find that?
Thanks. You can find it at most any bookstore, Wiley published. And so it's very, it's out and about, obviously Amazon,
not just Amazon,
Barnes and Noble. It's at local retailers as well. Also, it's on Audible and it's on eBooks and different venues if you'd rather listen than read.
And anywhere else you'd like to direct people if they want to learn more about you or what you're doing?
Sure. I'm more LinkedIn than Twitter. So reach out to me on LinkedIn. Love any kind of feedback on the book or anything that you'd like to learn or hear about. I also love to teach at different universities kind of as one-offs.
Oh,
and so
that's
why I love to have conversations. This has been great. And I'm so excited about this space.
Yes. Well, follow Annalise on follow Annalise on LinkedIn because she does post events and things and looks like you do a lot of speaking engagements. So if people want to hear you speak more.
Thank you. And just learn more.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Thanks so much for having me.
And thank you. I really enjoyed this conversation. I'm looking forward to watching your presentation this afternoon.
Fantastic. Thanks so much, Kyle.
Thank you. The cover art for this podcast was custom designed for us by the amazing people at Epic Made. Epic Made is a digital art and animation studio that actually understands the magic behind powerful creative assets for gaming, entertainment, and tech. So visit epicmade.com to get expert creative help for campaigns, commercials, socials, and more. That's epic-made.com. DSpark is the leading user research platform for Web3. Companies can easily get feedback from any type of user, helping them build better products and improve their marketing. If you're interested in giving feedback, get paid USDC to share your opinions and improve Web3. Visit DSpark.io today. That's DESPARK.io. Bola allows you to create, tokenize, and finance invoices and manage all of your on-chain accounts. With TCS Blockchain, they recently went live with their groundbreaking solution that uses blockchain to settle freight invoices 90% cheaper and faster than traditional means. Thank you for helping make this show possible, Bola. Go to bolanetwork.com and tcsblockchain.com to learn more and join the waitlist. Numbers Protocol harnesses blockchain technology to enhance authenticity and traceability of digital content globally, with operational bases in London, LA, Dubai, and Taiwan. Recognized as the best in Web3 at the 2023 SXSW Awards and supported by Google and NVIDIA, Numbers Protocol offers the Capture, an all-in-one suite for content verification, copyright protection, and monetization. This technology has proven pivotal in projects like the archival of the 2020 U.S. presidential election and supports artists and businesses in ensuring the integrity and security of digital media. Jotto is a cutting-edge platform that amplifies the customer voice by making it simple for organizations to gather feedback through video, audio, and text. Using powerful AI, Jotto analyzes this feedback in real time to deliver actionable insights that help organizations understand their audience better. Whether it's governments, businesses, or events, Jotto enables a deeper connection by ensuring every voice is heard and valued. It's an essential tool for anyone looking to turn raw feedback into strategic actions and drive meaningful engagement. So once again, thank you to our sponsors for helping make the show possible, and thank you everybody for listening. The views and opinions expressed on this program are their own and do not necessarily reflect the official policies or positions of any affiliated entities. The information shared in this podcast is for general informational purposes only and should not be construed as financial, legal, or professional advice. Always conduct your own research and consult with a qualified professional before making any decisions based on the content of this podcast. We appreciate your understanding and hope you enjoy the insights and expertise shared in today's episode.
Do you have anything to say about like the mortgage industry? Because as you're talking about some of these things, like the digital IDs, the anti-money laundering, all of this applies, but there's also that lending aspect, right? So you could remove some of the barriers from mortgage lending.
Absolutely. So there's a company called Figure that was started by Mike Cagney and June Oh, who had done SoFi previously. They also launched Provenance Blockchain, and their whole focus was how do we tokenize loans? And they have proven 150 basis point savings by using tokenization. They've even securitized loans. They started with home equity lines of credit, so HELOCs, and now they'll do mortgages. What's interesting is the securitization, having done securitization. So the securitization is them pooling together a bunch of loans and then selling them as bonds. So then the different risk profiles of bondholders can decide what risk they want to hold. So there's some different checks in there. Kind of obviously, if we can get digital for valuation is one thing. One thing is title. So people talk about like the title of who owns what. Perfect for blockchain. Very difficult to implement in the United States because every town, city, and county has a register of who owns what. And so, but there are different ways that they went about it in their securitization to have representations on that. So I'm a huge believer, because fixed income can be programmed. All of that can be programmed. And it can be easier to generate. So you can actually sign on to Figure and get a HELOC now. It is all, I believe that you get it all at one time as opposed to a line of credit. So you get it. And then you pay it back, which is easier as opposed to being able to have drawdown features. But absolutely, I'm a huge believer in that. So I would love to see all of fixed income tokenized, as in automated through blockchain and programmable. And I think that's one of the, you can put if-then conditionals in code as well. So if this happens, then this happens. So it doesn't have to be everyone gets paid right at the time and no one is watching. So there are, you can actually just have it be kind of automated, but with oversight. I don't think technology will get rid of people. I think you always need people, especially when you're in the financial world, because I'm, as a fiduciary, I want to make sure that I have to trust whoever it is I'm working with. So I do feel like people are still very important in this whole process, but it will still save us. The error from a lot of this data input is huge. Yes. And so blockchain will eliminate that.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of huge opportunities for the secondary market for mortgages as well.
Yes. Gives people opportunities.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes, right. It's democratization.
Yep.
Do you know of any like private mortgage companies that are looking into this, or...
I know there's a lot of looking into it, but actually rolling out a program are very different. So there's also more clarity in Europe with fixed income, with loans and bonds. And so with MiCA, more is being done there. And so that's where I think a lot of things are being tried. I know things are being tried in sandboxes like in Project Guardian in Singapore as well. I don't know of as many companies in the US. There are some startups that are looking at it, right? How do we offer more democratization or different, there's reverse mortgages too that people are looking at, but which would be a huge benefit to kind of the elderly who have a hard time getting mortgages and they have equity in their house, but they have limited fixed income, like low income. So I do think there's a lot of opportunities out there. And I think this is kind of where we'll see in another 5 years when we have a little bit more clarity from kind of DC and regulators.
That's going to be one of the big hurdles, especially in that industry. I just figured that a private company might be more open to the adoption than the bigger institutional.
There are people, I have had a lot of conversations over the years versus a lot of it actually coming to fruition. But there's little cases here and there, but it will be, I'm super excited in that space. Thank you for asking.
I work for a mortgage company, so I'm kind of interested in trying to pitch this a little bit. See where it goes.